Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
Some people say the veil between worlds is thin on Halloween night, but for some, that veil never closes. From the moment she was born and a baby who took her first breath on October 31st, the dead had already found her. Her mother swore it started in that old house, the one that smelled of lilacs and dust, and where the clocks never kept the same time. She'd watch her infant daughter lying in the crib, eyes tracking something across the ceiling, something no one else could see. Sometimes the baby would babble like she was answering a question. Other times she'd pause, listen, then respond again, as if an unseen friend were whispering right beside her ear. At first, her mother thought it was imagination, a baby doing what babies do. But the sound changed. The little girl's tone would deepen, her voice dropping to something impossible for a child. It wasn't cute or funny anymore. It was wrong. Her mother once described it as a man talking through my baby's mouth. That was the night she stopped standing too close to the crib after dark. She tried to laugh it off. "You were born on Halloween," she'd tell her friends. Of course, something strange about her. But she didn't laugh when her daughter, barely two, turned to her one morning and said, "They told me not to tell you their names." The grandmother's house stood quiet behind a row of pecan trees, its walls soaked in years of whispers. By the time the family moved out, her mother was convinced that something there had attached itself to them, something that wasn't going to let go easily. When they left that place, they moved down a long dirt drive to a small guest house tucked behind another home, the kind of place where the porch light buzzes with moths and the air smells like wet soil. That's where everything got worse. The nightmares started first, not the kind a child forgets by breakfast. These were the kind that left bruises. She'd wake screaming, swearing that something had grabbed her legs, pulled her down the bed. She said shadow people came out of the corners, moving fast, melting back into the dark before her mother could switch on the lamp. Her mother's fear grew too. She'd whisper to her husband at night about water dripping out of light sockets, about walls that seemed to sweat. "It's like the house is alive," she said once. He didn't believe her. An electrician came out, tested everything, and found nothing. "That's impossible, ma'am," he told her, trying not to sound patronizing. "You must be seeing condensation." But the look in her eyes made him pack up faster than usual. After that, something in her mother broke. She started keeping a Bible under her daughter's pillow. Said it was protection. Said her sister had warned her that demons feed on family fights. That they'd do anything to tear people apart. And tear them apart they did. The father's temper grew short, his words meaner. Fights started daily. Not small arguments, but door-slamming, plate-breaking chaos. The air in the house turned heavy, hard to breathe. It was as if the place wanted their anger. Then one morning, the night terrors stopped. Completely. The little girl woke up calm, but the house didn't. Objects still moved. Voices still whispered. The quiet was worse because now it was selective. A predator waiting. Her mother packed up what she could and moved them into the larger front house on the same property. Two more children by then, a baby and a toddler, both restless and sickly. She thought a fresh start on the same land might help. It didn't. If anything, whatever had followed them seemed pleased by the new audience. The little girl, now maybe seven, would wake up to find her pillow ripped from under her head. Sometimes she'd see her baby sister's blanket floating above the crib, her sister's face frozen in silent terror. Other nights, something would knock hard on her bedroom door but stop the moment anyone answered. And then there was the night of the ponytail. She was sitting on the living room floor with her sister playing a video game. The room was dim except for the flicker of the TV. Suddenly, she felt her braid lift straight up, like someone had grabbed it and was holding it tight. She spun around. "Stop it!" she snapped at her sister. But her sister was across the room, eyes wide. "I didn't touch you." Her mother looked up from the couch and went pale. "Honey," she whispered, it's in the air. The girl turned slowly. Her ponytail was still suspended, like an invisible hand had her by the hair. The air felt thick, vibrating. The moment she screamed, it dropped, like someone let go. From that night on, the haunting no longer hid. Cabinets would burst open, doors unlocked themselves. They'd leave for a walk and return to find every light blazing, the shower running, the toilet flushing on its own. The bangs on the walls grew so violent that the nails began working loose from the frames. They couldn't take it anymore. They moved, but it followed her. Even in new houses, even in new states, the same pattern repeated. The same footsteps at night, heavy and deliberate. The same sense of being watched. It seemed tethered, not to a place, but to her. She tried to grow up normally. She learned to ignore the whispers, to explain away the noises, to pretend the cold air brushing her shoulder was nothing but bad insulation. Years passed. She fell in love, moved to Florida, started a new life. And for a while, 5 years maybe, the quiet returned. Then she moved into her current house. From the first day, something was off. The air felt thick. The corners darker than they should be. She catch herself glancing over her shoulder, convinced she wasn't alone. At first, it was subtle, a shape moving past a doorway. Her name whispered when no one was home. But soon, the shadows became bold again, the same presence she'd felt her entire life. She told herself she could handle it this time. She had learned its games. Until her son was born, he was two now, bright, happy, and curious, until bedtime. That's when the screaming started. He'd stand in the doorway of his room, clutching the frame, sobbing, refusing to step inside. "Scary, Mama," he'd cry. "Scary." At first, she thought it was a phase, the kind toddlers go through, but deep down she knew. She'd seen the same fear before, in her own eyes, reflected in a mirror 30 years ago. She tried everything, nightlights, soothing music, toys in the bed. Nothing helped. Every night he'd point toward the corners or the ceiling and cry harder. And that's when she remembered. This was the same room where she'd first seen the shadow figures when they moved in. Strange how certain houses breathe differently at night, how the silence takes on a pulse, faint, but living. That's what it felt like in that room. The first time her son screamed, she rushed in expecting to find a nightmare, a toy fallen, a noise outside. But his eyes weren't fixed on the bed or the window. They were locked on the corner of the room, high above his crib, where the shadows were thickest. At first, she saw nothing. Then, for just a moment, she thought she saw a movement, a darker shape within the dark. She blinked, and it was gone. She told herself it was a trick of her tired eyes, a shifting light from the street outside. But deep down, she felt that familiar charge in the air. The same one that made her mother's voice tremble years ago. Days went by. The activity grew subtle but constant. Whispers under the hum of the TV. Doors that clicked open when no one touched them. Her name carried on the air like a memory. Then one night, something happened that she couldn't rationalize away. Her son's father was out late, and the house was unusually still. She and her little boy were walking down the hall toward the bedroom. She turned off the lights behind them, one switch, then the next, until only the soft glow from the TV lit the path ahead. Her son stopped mid-step, turned toward the dark hallway, and said brightly, "Well, hello." She froze. There was no one there. No sound, no shadow on the wall. Her heart thudded so hard she could hear the blood in her ears. "Who are you talking to, baby?" she asked, trying to sound calm. He pointed toward the wall. "That man," he said, giggling at first, until his face fell. His smile faded into something confused, then scared. "He's gone now." She didn't sleep that night, and after that, it became a pattern. He'd be watching cartoons and suddenly crane his neck toward the ceiling, eyes following something invisible moving slowly across it. "Mama, what's that?" he'd whisper. "The ceiling, baby," she'd answer, forcing a laugh. But he'd keep watching it move across the living room, down the hall, until he'd say softly, "Oh, where'd it go?" Every time she felt the same chill climb her spine. That pressure in the air like someone had opened a door to a storm that never ends. Sometimes he'd be playing with his toys and stop dead, staring at the empty wall. Then he'd run to her, burying his face in her legs, trembling. "Mama, it's scary," he'd cry. "Mama, get it." She'd follow his gaze, but there was never anything there. No shadow, no sound, no reason for that kind of terror in a child's eyes. She started trying to teach him what her mother once told her, to take his power back, to speak up to whatever was there. "Tell it," she whispered one night as he clung to her shirt. "Don't scare me." "I'm not going to play with you if you scare me." His tiny voice repeated the words, trembling. "Be nice, Mr. Ghost." "No, scare me." For a moment, the air shifted, like something had listened. The lights flickered once, then quiet. That quiet never lasted long. As much as she wanted to believe the haunting was bound to the house, deep down she knew better. This wasn't about geography, it was about blood, about inheritance. Because she had seen this before, in Michigan, in Indiana, in every place she'd ever lived, the details changed, the walls changed, but the feeling didn't. That heavy, watchful presence that slipped between rooms and decades, always finding her again. There were times it went dormant, when life got busy, when her faith or her focus was strong, but eventually it always came back. Like a storm season, you learn to survive, not stop. And now, it had found her son. She remembered her mother once saying that the things feeding off them weren't random, that they thrived on fear, pain, and division. They liked chaos. They liked watching families crumble. Looking back, it made sense. The screaming matches between her parents, the sudden mood swings, her father's dark temper that came out of nowhere. The more she thought about it, the more it felt like possession. Not the Hollywood kind, but something quieter. A corruption that seeps in through emotion. You don't see it happen. You just wake up one day and realize you're all speaking the language of anger. She began to wonder if whatever followed her had started long before she was even born. Maybe at her grandmother's house, yes. But maybe before that, too. Sometimes the haunting of a family isn't tied to a house, it's tied to a lineage. Maybe her grandmother knew. Maybe that's why the old woman kept crosses on every wall, or why she muttered prayers in her sleep. Maybe whatever latched onto them didn't start with her birth on Halloween. Maybe that night just awakened it. In the weeks that followed, her son's behavior grew more erratic. He'd refuse to go into his room, even in daylight. He'd wake screaming from naps, pointing to the same corner of the ceiling where she'd once seen the shadow shift. Sometimes he'd talk to it like it was a person saying, "No, stop," or "Go away," with tears streaming down his face. And then there was one morning she'll never forget. She woke to the sound of toys clattering on the floor. When she went to check, her son was sitting in the middle of the living room, every toy car lined up in a perfect circle around him. He was whispering softly. But the words weren't his, the tone, the rhythm. They were too low, too old. She called his name. He looked up, eyes glassy. "Mama," he said. "He says you can't stop him." Her throat went dry. She knelt, grabbing his tiny hands. "Who, baby?" "Who said that?" He blinked, then suddenly smiled, that same innocent, sweet smile, and shrugged. "The man." Just like that, he went back to playing, humming softly. But she couldn't shake the chill that hung in the room long after. That night, she saged every corner of the house, opened windows, prayed out loud. She learned that fear was fuel, and she refused to feed it anymore. The smell of sage lingered for days, and for a while, things were calm. Her son slept through the night. No whispers, no shadows, no cries. But deep down, she didn't trust the silence. Because she knew better than anyone. That's when it watches. That's when it waits. For a while, it was peaceful. Or maybe she just convinced herself it was. Weeks went by without incident. The house felt lighter. Her son laughed more, played freely again. The air didn't hum anymore when she walked through a room. For the first time in years, she dared to think. Maybe it was over. But hauntings rarely end. They only pause. It started again one night in late summer. The air conditioner had gone out and the house was uncomfortably warm. She'd left the bedroom window cracked open, hoping for a breeze. She lay awake, listening to her son's steady breathing through the baby monitor. Then came a sound, faint but distinct. A man's voice whispering. It was coming through the monitor. At first she thought it might be interference, someone's radio or maybe a neighbor's TV. But the words grew clearer, closer. It wasn't a broadcast, it was directed. She sat up, every nerve on fire. "Hello," she whispered into the monitor as if expecting a reply. The voice stopped. Then came her son's cry, not startled, terrified. The kind of scream that rips through the night like it's trying to warn you of something ancient. She sprinted down the hall, threw open his door and froze. The air was freezing. Every toy in the room, the cars, the stuffed animals, the building blocks, was scattered across the floor, as if thrown. Her son stood in the middle of it all, pointing at the wall. "Mama," he sobbed. "He said we can't leave." She scooped him up and ran, not even bothering with the lights. They slept in the living room that night with every lamp on, the Bible, her mother's old Bible, clutched against her chest. In the days that followed, she kept noticing small things again. Water trickling from places it shouldn't, like the walls were sweating, lights flickering, the faint smell of something metallic in the air. Not blood exactly, but something close. It was her childhood all over again. Her son would play quietly, then suddenly stop, eyes locked on the same dark corner by the hallway. He'd whisper things she couldn't make out, nodding as if in response to someone. When she'd call his name, he'd blink as though coming out of a trance. "It's okay, Mama," he'd say. "He's just looking." The last time she heard those words, she was 8 years old, standing in her grandmother's kitchen, and her mother was whispering on the phone, "He's just looking. Don't make him mad." She realized in that moment that history wasn't repeating. It was continuing. The same energy, the same cold intelligence passed down like an heirloom nobody asked for. She decided to call her aunt, the one her mother said had always warned about demons feeding on families. Her aunt was older now, her voice tired but still sharp. When she told her everything, there was a long pause on the other end of the line. "I told your mama years ago," her aunt said quietly. "Some things don't die with people. They follow blood. They mark it. You can move, you can pray, you can bless, but once they've claimed a line, they'll test every generation." Her voice softened. "They tried to take your mama first. Looks like they're testing you now." The line went dead before she could ask another question. That night, she sat alone after her son fell asleep. The moonlight stretched long across the floorboards. She remembered every moment, her braid rising in the air, the floating blanket, the voices that whispered in the walls, the water dripping from light sockets. All those years she had blamed the houses, the towns, even her parents, but now she knew better. It wasn't the walls, it was the womb. She'd been born into something she never consented to, something that fed quietly, waiting for fear to grow ripe. But what haunted her most wasn't what it wanted from her. It was what it wanted from her son. The next day, she did something she swore she'd never do again. She called a priest, not because she thought it would fix everything, but because she needed to try. When he arrived, he didn't smirk or dismiss her story. He walked through each room in silence, pausing now and then like he was listening to something just below hearing. After nearly an hour, he returned to the living room and said softly, "There's a heaviness here. Not human, not quite evil, but old. Very old. It attaches through lineage, through fear." She nodded. "Can you make it leave?" He hesitated. "It doesn't leave, but you can starve it." And he explained that faith, in any form, weakens it. Love weakens it. Laughter weakens it. He told her to fill the house with noise, with joy, with prayer. Not the kind from a book, but the kind that comes from defiance. "You can't fight what you fear," he said. "You have to stop feeding it." For weeks, she tried. Music always playing, candles burning, laughter echoing through the house even when she had to fake it. Slowly, the air began to shift, lighter, easier to breathe. Her son began sleeping in his room again. No screams, no pointing, just the soft snore of a peaceful child. And still, every night before bed, she whispered the same thing into the dark. Not him. You can have me, but not him. Months passed. It became almost normal. She allowed herself to believe maybe finally it was over. Until the night she woke to a whisper. It was faint but close, inches from her ear. A man's voice low and calm. You can't trade what's already ours. Her blood ran cold. She turned on the lamp. The room was empty. But on the floor near her bed, her son's toy truck sat upright, facing the doorway. Though she knew she'd packed it away the night before. She walked to his room, heart pounding. He was fast asleep, tiny chest rising and falling, face peaceful. For a moment, she thought maybe she imagined it. Maybe exhaustion had finally cracked her mind. Then she saw it, the faintest imprint on the sheet beside him, the shape of a hand. Long fingers pressed deep into the fabric as though something had just been sitting there, watching him. She didn't scream, didn't wake him. She just stood there, frozen, staring into that corner where the air still seemed to shimmer. It took her back to her grandmother's house, to her mother's frightened eyes, to the electrician who said water can't drip from light sockets, to the way her own braid once lifted, on its own. All of it, looping through time. She knew she could run again, to another town, another house, another state, but the truth was finally too heavy. To ignore. Some hauntings aren't in the walls. They're in the blood, the breath, the memories that pass from mother to child like stories we never stop telling. So now when her son wakes in the night and says he's scared, she doesn't tell him it's nothing. She sits beside him, holds his hand, and says softly, "I know." And somewhere in the dark, something listens. It always has.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Extra value meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.